So the elevator pitch would be, I consider myself, I'm the gay edgelord. The gay edgelord is the brand. I like to just be very aggressive when I play my video games. I like my high octane gameplay. I like having a good time. I get loud. I do all sorts of weird stuff. I've been pied in the face. I like to wear costumes. I dress up. Like, we just go, it's just, we go from unhinged to just also just chilling with the homies.
It's time for an adventure in the worlds of user experience and game design.
On Level 4
of the Design Thinking Games podcast, join old school UXers and aspiring game designers Michael Schofield, Tim Broadwater, and an array of quirky characters from pixelated heroes to mischievous NPCs in search of the ultimate player experience. Design thinking is a process that is applied to different types of games in this podcast. If you're wondering whether your favorite games have already come up, you can listen through the backlog at designthinkinggames.com. Now, Rapid Protobot, fire the design thinking laser.
Could you give us a little bit about, like, your background, your introduction, young baby Chad's kind of exposure to games and video games and what you played?
Absolutely. So I definitely was playing video. I was very fortunate that my brother, I have an older brother that was very into video games. He's like, was he 8 years older than me? So we started out on the NES. Like, I remember starting out on the NES, playing regular Legend of Zelda, playing Sesame Street games, learning how to read, learning how to do math. Growing up, we never had cable. So it was literally just straight on just video games all day, every day. And we were also very fortunate that my mom would also get us pretty much, you know, if we asked for the systems, like for Christmas and stuff, we were very lucky to be able to get, you know, it went from NES, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, GameCube, N64, like all of those. We had all the consoles, and I never touched PC until honestly about like 6 or 7 years ago.
What is probably one of your earliest or most positive, like, gaming memories, or like first into games when you were a kid?
I would say Zelda. There was just something about Zelda, just the atmosphere, just that whole sense of adventure, like getting lost and like finding things by accident, where it was just like this. I mean, obviously I'm not at that time, I didn't know, but like that incredible rush of just like discovering things. And like, I was literally obsessed with everything Zelda the second I'd seen eyes on it. Like, y'all remember when, you know, NES games were out, they had the instruction booklets with like the lore, like the prologue and all the actual artwork in there. Like, I would just sit there and I was obsessed.
Maybe it's equivalent to a steel book now, but there's something like really kind of like experiential just about like the packaging, right? Because like Zelda itself was like gold, right?
Yep.
And then for me, like, I got Zelda alongside the Game Genie. Do you remember that shit?
Oh, of course I had Game Genie.
and the Game Genie was also gold, right? Yep. I just imagine that newer gamers don't really have this experience, the physicality of being able to play games. Having to like maybe get under your shelf and like blow in it, because that was the only way to like fix cartridge death or something, or there's no pausing. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to keep your place, you could never let your TV go off. Different times, better times.
I love that.
Yeah.
I don't know
what I was going off with that. Yeah.
And like, one of the biggest things about like physical games, I don't know if you guys played Metal Gear Solid for PlayStation 1.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
So the part where you have to get the codec number, but you have to look at the back of the CD case in order to be able to get it. And like, if you rented the game, you would never be able to get past that part. Of course, there was no internet back there. So, and it was just one of those wild things where it's like, damn, they actually meant the actual back of the fucking CD case of the PlayStation game was how you were able to get the codec for. I think, I can't remember who it was, but just like moments like that, it's just wild that you'll never get to experience again.
I remember when you had to swap for Psycho Mantis and you had to swap the controllers from 1 to 2. Oh
yeah.
And I was like, is this real right now? Is this meta? How does it know? Is it watching me play the game?
Absolutely mind-boggling. And then it came out for, did you play the one for GameCube, the Twin Snakes remake?
I did not. But fast forwarding all the way to now, what type of gamer are you? Like, how would you describe yourself of what you play now? And you can watch you Twitch, and if it's different versus like, hey, this is what I play for myself or whatever.
So like, the dynamic of like my gaming experience definitely changed, you know, as I grew older. You know, we all have less time. You know, it's harder to be able to just sit there and play through a game. Like, my completion level of video games has just dramatically decreased. Like, I can start games, finishing them is just, it's just a task all in itself, especially because I love JRPGs. If you stop playing a JRPG for like a day or two or three, or God forbid a week, You don't know where the fuck you are. You don't know what you're doing or what's going on in the story. And you're just like, you know what? I'm just going to play a game where I just press start and that's all I got to do. So as like I've shifted a little bit, I've been mostly a pretty heavy Overwatch streamer, which we play competitive. Been very fortunate that our Discord and the amount of friends that we have met on Twitch have just grown to the point where yesterday we had our first custom games where we had 10 people just playing custom games all day yesterday. It was pretty fucking magical. It was pretty magical. And then, so if I'm not playing Overwatch, I try to keep up with like, you know, current indie games. Like I have a wish list the size of, you know, Santa's list. It's just wild. But I also play a lot of Final Fantasy 14. I used to play a lot of WoW, but in terms of like the last like canon game, Elden Ring was the last canon game I played. I played it when it first came out. I did exactly what I described, where I played it for like a month. I got frustrated. I got lost. I didn't know what I was doing. So I just stopped playing it. And then I revisited it after a year, made sure that I played it every single day until I completed it. And it was incredible.
One of the things that really stood out like about Elden Ring was just kind of like how communally viral it was. It was on TikTok everywhere. In your opinion, like what makes a game hit that zeitgeist like that?
So there's definitely a bunch of factors that go into it. First of all, it being, you know, a Souls game, of course, has, you know, the whole Souls genre exploded. Like indie games just took the adaption of like, oh, it's a Souls-like. And I thoroughly remember when I first played Dark Souls, I was incredibly enamored. You know, growing up playing old NES games, we're no strangers to impossible games like Contra. You know, every Konami game was fucking impossible. And I love those games. I love games that are really hard that like just beat your ass over and over again. And so it has this already huge cult following. Like everybody knows what a Souls-like game, just like how everybody knows what a Metroidvania type game is. So it had that on top of it. And then it had the hype for such a long time. There's like two different things that happen when there's hype like this. When there's really big hype and anticipation, you have to deliver or else it becomes like the biggest bombshell ever. And it had the hype and it was years in the making and everybody was excited for this full blown, you know, Souls game that, you know, like it was like everybody's like biggest fantasy ever. And then it came to fruition. It delivered, it worked on launch, and it just blew everybody away.
Yeah. I feel like I bought it with the intention of playing it. I never put it in once. Because it literally is this thing to where, like you said, I'm playing like Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth right now.
Nice.
And it's just like, yep, this is going to be 6 weeks of my life.
Yep. Very, very, it's very overwhelming. It's huge.
Thirst is a 2-4 player vampire versus vampire game of dominion in which players become powerful, monstrous, and bloodthirsty vampires. Rise from the graveyard hungry to find that you are not the only creature of darkness in town. Fight other vampires for dominion over neighborhoods and for influence. Hunt, but hunt wisely. The first vampire to accrue an influence score of 10 wins and can finally slake their thirst. Thirst is on Kickstarter. Sign up to get notified of its launch at thirstboardgame.com. Find Thirst and other things we're working on at designthinkinggames.com.
Did you guys ever get like to a moment in your life too where like, because like as a, you know, as gamers, as growing up and stuff, like nostalgia was like such a huge weapon that like, you know, I would always get like sucked into nostalgia. Did you guys ever have a moment where like nostalgia almost like stopped working on you, where you're like, you know what? I don't need to replay this game right now. Like this remake sounds awesome and I just don't actually need it right now. And I remember precisely when that happened. I was like, you know what? It just didn't work on me anymore.
Yes, I can say it. What was yours first? I'm curious.
So I love JRPGs. I remember when Persona 4 Golden got remade. I was like, oh, I'm going to play this from beginning to end. I'm so fucking excited for this. And I started it and I was like, you know what? I played this. I know what happens. I don't need to do this again. And like it kind of like snowballed there from there. Like Nintendo, I mean, has made some amazing remakes, like the Zelda Link's Awakening, great remake and stuff. That's but like, yeah. I get really excited about it. And then like it wears off so fast because I'm like, you know what? I know what happens. I did this.
Yeah. The biggest example for me, and I would actually say for Nintendo snafu, was actually this year or last year, which was I have such great memories of playing Super Mario RPG.
Yes.
And then I played the shit out of it. And it was just like, oh my God, same. This is turn-based, but combined with Mario. And then it's action light which, you know, if I hit on the punches or I hit or my defenses, it does something kind of like all of that was precursor to like, you know, like the Mario Rabbids kind of games and then all these kind of cool stuff. So I was like, hell yeah, I'm super excited for it. I'm a big Nintendo fanboy when they push the envelope. And so like last year was insane. It was like Bayonetta 3 and it was like Pikmin 4 and like, you know, kind of Tears of the Kingdom. And I was like, amazing, amazing, amazing. Like 4 for 4, 4 for 4. And then like Super Mario RPG came out, the remake, which I had paid for months and months and months in advance. And I didn't even log 35, 40 minutes. I took the shit right back to the store. And it was... And it literally was not just me, because online you could, on Reddit and anywhere else you can find, it was just like, hey, this is a point to where, you know, unlike Link's Awakening or unlike a game to where Nintendo is like, let's just really do some amazing stuff when we, you know, kind of reboot it. They did nothing. They literally did like nothing. And it plays clunky and old, like the Super NES, the old game. I'm not sure if either of you two played it, but for me, I was just like, no. And I would say before that, the example is the last 2-3 Pokemon games. I have been on Pokemon since Blue and then went to like Metal. And then I play for Pokemon Home. I have like hundreds of Pokemon. I have like bear teams and dog teams. And I have triple evolution fairy type teams and like all this. But then like after the last 2 or 3 games, like probably post Shield or Sun and Moon, maybe. I don't know. I was just like, this is the same shit over and over. And you got me for the first 6 times. You got me the first. And it's so I would say Nintendo is probably the worst offender in my opinion of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Pokemon is a great example where it literally becomes just like a pressing A simulator. And just everything almost feels so uninspired to a certain point. Mm-hmm. It's Mario RPG. So like, when I played Zelda 2, Link's Adventure is when I developed the understanding that I love RPG elements. And when I first played Super Mario RPG like that, like Super Nintendo had incredible RPGs and that shit blew me away. Like I was obsessed with Mario RPG. And the fact that I did not buy the one for the remake on Switch just kind of speaks volumes to exactly that whole nostalgia thing just not being strong enough.
Well, I've been burned by nostalgia. And so like for you guys, it seems like maybe you kind of got like tired of the thing because it's not introducing anything new. But, you know, this kind of dovetails with the whole idea where Star Wars kind of ruined itself for me. So now I just don't even have an appetite for that anymore. My favorite games of all time are old PC games from, I think, like the late 90s, early aughts called Thief from an old studio called Looking Glass Studio. I don't know if it was the first, but I think it was the first good, what you would consider like a first person sneaker. So if you think about Metal Gear Solid, where you're creeping around and you have to watch where footsteps are, that's what Thief is. And on like Xbox One, I think they rebooted Thief and there was a new Thief and it was a big hype for me. And I remember Ryan McCaffrey on IGN, who was like one of the guys I really liked, was like all Thief, Thief, Thief. And I was like, yes, there's at least one person on this planet who understands. And even though the voice actor was totally alive and well, they totally recast it and they added a lot of mechanics to make Thief easier. And it spoiled it for me. I was like, I think I'm done. And so when I was really craving like Mass Effect and it dropped Andromeda, I was actually able to not jump on that hype train for a really long time. I've basically been able to see like nostalgia as a kind of smell, right? If I'm feeling nostalgic or there's like nostalgic related hype, I'm probably like backing off. I'm like, look, I can go back now and play these games if I ever desire to, but I also kind of recognize that maybe they're not as good.
I think they're
best in memory.
You've got something. I think both of your points are valid because I feel like if they're pushing, and not to tick back to Nintendo, but the reason why I like Pikmin so much is because they make it better every single time it comes out. You know, Pokemon did that for a while. Like for a while it was just like, oh shit, I have to have my person in the party and they have to be in a fight if I want to experience. And that was back in like Metal and Solid Collar. And they're like, let's put an experience egg in, or let's give all the party experience, or you know, let's make controlling your Pikmin easier, or let's make it group selecting Pikmin and controlling and easier. And that's what people love. They're just like, hell yeah, this is exactly what it was, but it's better and faster and they've added more. But when they literally do nothing except a graphics update, that's when it's, I think it hurts. Yeah.
For sure. And it's difficult. There's a difficult balance between making a game accessible versus making a game like destroying the experience for people like that enjoy like that hardcore experience. Like I saw that one of your big accomplishments, Tim, was beating Cuphead. Like, yeah, like that, like there, because we're used to like that, like we're used to suffering through that, you know, that difficulty because it feels good when you get through it. And it's like that you have to create this balance of like making it difficult and fun where people want to keep trying versus difficult and people will just put it down, get mad and never touch it again.
Yeah, this is something we've talked about a couple times on our podcast and I want to get your perspective on it. I am, let's say we put in random action game of random IP that everyone likes, right? And then essentially it's a great action game for this random IP that we all love. And it's got a great story. However, as you're playing it, let's say all three of us, Mike, me, and you, Chad, like encounter like, oh shit, this combat's getting a little hectic. This is a little grindy. I just don't really... I am the very first fucking person who will turn it down to neighborhood friendly Spider-Man mode or just like super easy mode or just like wussy mode. Cause yeah. I don't care. I have low tolerance for that kind of bullshit. Unless the purpose is specifically to like Cuphead, you know, do this difficult thing, this very, mm-hmm. very difficult thing. How do you feel about it?
I'm very much like, I love when games are hard. I play games on the hard difficulty just because it forces me to play the game more. If a game is too easy, I will start doing like the bare minimum. But like if a game, so like the game, The Witcher 3, incredible game. And there's, you know, there's the super difficulty. And when games reward you for playing on the harder difficulty where they have like better upgrades, better items and better weapons and stuff, that to me is like just an instant sell. I'm very much, if I change the difficulty, I won't change it back. I can't do it to myself. I'm very stubborn in that regard. I'll sit there and do the same thing over and over for 5-6 hours straight until I do.
If you've stumbled onto the station, welcome back. Your host, Mr. Graves, returns with a brand new collection of terrifying tales designed to chill you to the bone.
Make the biggest discovery this world has ever seen.
Oh, what is happening to me?
We also have an assortment of characters that are just dying to meet you.
It took him to hell.
Can you understand us better now?
You may need to leave the light on for this one. Your Horror Show, Season 2, premiering on all podcast platforms May 14th. Listen, if you dare.
I want to ask you about your streaming content a little bit, mm-hmm. because we follow the stream the stream queens, a collective of like horror kind of streamers. I'm sure you know them. And then I guess I'm wondering, my question is more about this. I know that people, I've seen a bunch of people who do charity events and fundraisers and do different types of things on their stream. I want to understand your perspective on the game of the day kind of thing. Because right now, like, for example, a lot of people stream Overwatch. A lot of people stream Dead by Daylight. Mm-hmm. You know, and then when the new hotness drops, of course, that's when everyone's like, oh, I got to stream this for a week. What is your perspective on that? Because, man, games, we were just talking, like, in our last episode about, you know, the game of the years last year. And, you know, Baldur's Gate 3-1. And we were mm-hmm. talking about, like, sheer last year was like, dude, there was just so many fucking good games that came out on every single console.
Yep.
So how do you decide, like, what to stream or, like, what to do, especially if you have, like, new hotness dropping on every single console all the time?
Yeah, so this is actually, it's a tough one. It's a tough one for me for a couple of reasons. Because you have to take into account too, like what do people like to watch? Where can I engage with people the most as well? So like for me, especially like when a game first comes out that I'm excited for, if I don't buy it like within the first like couple of days, I'll just kind of, it'll just go on to like my wish list. I'm very mm-hmm. like, I love that in the moment, like hype of the game, like right when it comes out, that's the best time to play it. And like, if like a couple of weeks like go on, then I'll kind of just, you know, I'll just kind of like put it aside. And I've been maining mostly Overwatch, more just because it's like, you know, there's people that always come back, you know, I've been meeting people that like to play the game, and I've been actually like really just, you know, been meeting a great amount of people. So I'm always like, this new game comes out, but I'm like, oh, we like playing Overwatch together. So what do I do? And then I'm like, it kind of got to a point where like, I wasn't able to kind of like enjoy games with not streaming, because like, if I was playing like this really cool story game or something, like, holy shit, this was a really awesome moment, I wish people were watching this. So it like became like this urge to like, I feel like I have like, it just almost became like an impulse where I just have to like share it with people, or it's more fun to share it with people than just to be able to enjoy it myself.
What's your journey been? When did you actually start like, hey, I'm going to just start doing this and commit to it?
Yeah, it was, like I said, when I got my computer, when I first got like a functioning computer is when I decided, I was like, you know what, it would be cool to like, you know, talk about video games and like start streaming and stuff. I had never been on Twitch before. Like, I'd made my Twitch profile when I started streaming about 4 years ago. And it was just like this thing, like as soon as I like started doing it, like I became like instantly enthralled with it. And, you know, we were talking about like ADHD and stuff like that. I'm sure y'all have had your hyperfixations that last a month, a week, you know, maybe a year or something. This is like one of the only things that like I've done besides just regular gaming that I've absolutely stuck with this long. And like, I'm not going to lie, there's been so many times where I've wanted to quit, where I've wanted to delete everything, where I want to delete all my social media, or you never want to stream again. And I'll go through those honestly, like maybe like once every 2 weeks, 3 weeks. But then I sit there to think about how much of a improvement it's been in my life to have that creative outlet, to kind of have something to look forward to kind of work towards and kind of like build upon. And I've, you know, a lot of the people I've met, like, oh, you know, I want to start streaming now. You make streaming look like fun. And like, that is just like such an amazing feeling. I've got people that like started streaming where they said they've started streaming because of me. And that just like, it's just one of those things, like you just feel like you can't like stop them once you have those things, mm-hmm. once you've met those connections and have those people that you've met. So I literally have like pretty much, you know, made the contract with myself where I'm just going to like keep pushing. And like, I could definitely do this full time if I was able to get my timing under control, if I was able to, you know, have like a steady stream of like content besides just streaming and like work harder, like get sponsorships and like get things that were, you know, that would enable me to do it full time.
Because is that something you're interested in doing? I'm just curious. You
know. Absolutely. Absolutely. I like, it sounds corny, but it's like Twitch is like that gateway for people to like apps to actually like do things that they love. And it's like something that it's there, you know, if you put the time in, you put the work in, it literally enables you to do, you know, do something for fun that you actually like and be able to get paid for it. And it's like, I could stream easily 8-10 hours a day, every single day. I know for a fact I could.
I'd be interested in your take as you see a potential future where this is like your full-time thing. What are like the real the gotchas or sort of like the trade-offs of like turning like maybe some of like the unpleasant things of turning this into your
full-time
self-definition into your life that like the other people like you want to grow up to be a streamer, like what don't they get?
If you're doing it for like your full-time job and stuff, it, especially if like you're used to having like, you know, a corporate job or whatever, you're used to like that steady income, you know, you can slack off at work and still get paid. You can slack off and you're still going to get your paycheck or your salary or whatever. But like, if you're doing it for yourself, like everything is just so tied to the amount of work that you're going to put into it. And, you know, you start to, you know, numbers and stuff become like your positive reinforcement, which is good and bad. It's good because it motivates you to keep working when everything lands and it sticks. But when it doesn't work, you get really down on yourself. You can get really self-conscious. You're like, what am I doing? Like, how did I fuck this up? Like, sometimes you plan something, you put a lot of effort and work into it, and like, nobody's interested. Like, you completely miss the mark. And then there's times where like, you kind of just fly off the seat of your cuff and then you just, you know, go with the flow. And then all of a sudden, like, it explodes. You really can't plan your success. All you can do is keep yourself constant. And the amount of times where like I've like had, you know, there's been times where I've had like, you know, a month of like failed streams where like just things were not working out. And like you get down on yourself and you're like, well, I'm not going to do this anymore. You know, this isn't, you know, I'm just not, you know, maybe I'm not cut out for this or whatever. Or just you feel like people lost interest in you. And a big thing for me, just like personally, is I try not to ever focus on like big accomplishments because they tend to like stress me out. Where like if I have a really good stream, like I've had, you know, really successful streams, I've done subathons, and like the hardest thing is when you do really well is being able to follow up on that. Cause you're like, how am I going to be able to top that? How am I going to be able to do anything in that caliber where it's going to be that big or that exciting? So then you kind of, for me, sometimes I'll just freeze them and like not know what to do. And then like a week will go by. And then it's like 2 weeks. Then all of a sudden it's like 3 weeks and I just lost all this momentum because all I had to do was keep myself consistent instead of worrying about how to top what I just did.
I feel like it's like your gym. It's like the gym side, right? It's the whole workout side where it's like motivation is great. Motivation is good, but motivation fails you. It's discipline. It's always discipline that gets you into the gym.
Yeah, absolutely. It's And I'm one of those people too, that like, once I stop, it's so hard for me to get going again. It is so hard. If I stop something or if I like take weekends off or if I take days off or whatever, it is so hard to get back on that. It's just, you keep going. And like, I've had friends that have gone completely viral, like in the millions, and it's always happened pretty much by accident. It's always happened by accident.
My sin is envy. For me, like the grass is always greener. I'm a creature of envy. And for that, one of the reasons that like, I'm not actually super duper present on social and the creative things I make are just, you know, like our work, like I have to keep them kind of like regimented to a schedule, and I put them out and I don't look at the numbers. I'll see someone get like go and like have massive success. And I have to like, I can't see that because then I won't want to like make my own or whatever. How does like the success of like people in your community affect you or motivate? Like, does it like, how do you kind of like deal with that shit?
So that's a huge thing. And like, people don't like to talk about it, but for some reason, you know, we're humans. We jealousy is a real thing. We get jealous. We get envious. You know what you said? It's something that happens. And what's the thing that people always say? Comparison is like the thief of joy or something like that. It's so fucking true. Because there's just so many things that you don't see. Like, you could see somebody being successful and it's like, oh, well, they're just doing this. But no, it's not that they're just doing this. Like, they've been putting in the work and this and that. And I always, you know, will have like those conversations with myself. And it's about if you can like turn that into like motivation. Like, a lot of people will say like on social media, like when I was like in the gym and like lifting and taking pictures every day, and people are like, why do you take pictures? Yada, yada. I'm like, you know why? Because when other people take pictures, it makes me want to go. And so like, you kind of use that mentality and it's like, you know what? If you inspire at least one person, if at least one person likes it, then you know you did your job right. That's pretty much all that matters.
How do people find out more about you, connect to you? What can they look forward from you?
So the biggest way is I do have quite an active and wonderful Discord community. And that's where like, you know, where I'm always going to have the going live and stuff. And that's where people are going to know my schedule. But I've been pretty consistent with streaming on weekends. But like, if anybody ever wants to get a hold of me, it's always going to be through Discord. Like, Instagram is so hard to keep track of like messages and stuff. But Discord, I try to keep it as clean as possible. So that way anybody tries to get a hold of me or if anybody wants to talk to me, like I'm always there. And, but yeah, I'm always streaming on the weekends. I like to consider it like where I put in my 8 hours, but sometimes we'll put in some overtime. Sometimes we'll do 8, 10, 11 hour streams on the weekends. Just try to, try to grind it out as much as possible.
That's a lot.
It's fun. It's crazy. I swear I could just do it forever. But the hardest thing for me is like, because I do have a full-time job. I work Monday through Friday. I'm a behavior specialist for folks with intellectual developmental disabilities and folks on the autism spectrum. So like, the hardest thing for me is like, Saturday and Sunday, I get to be like this animated, like, you know, say anything. And like, I feel like I'm in control of like, you know, streaming and in control of my job and whatever. And then like the immersion break of having to go back to work on Monday and like do like regimented things and like sit down and do meetings and stuff. And it's like that shift, I'm so fucking miserable on Mondays. I am so fucking miserable on Mondays because it's like Saturday and Sunday, I'm living the fucking dream. Just living the dream. And then Monday it's like, oh God, we got to start this all over again and do a whole other 5 days of this. And it's just, that part is so fucking hard.
Get ready for the game that's hot. D12's what you've got. 12 questions gotta be quick. Can you handle it? Can you stick? D12, roll the dice, answer well. D12, will you triumph or fail? Rapid fire, no time to rest. D12, roll the dice, answer well. D12, will you triumph
Oh, sorry. So we're in like product engineering. So if this doesn't mean anything to you, we'll skip, right?
All right.
But since I, like Tim already crossed it out, but since I prefaced it, I'm just going to ask it. Make something up. I don't know. If you could give yourself any kind of user experience title, what would it be?
Oh, man. I would probably, a user experience title? I have no idea what a user experience title would be, so I'm just going to go with Taskmaster. I want to be a Taskmaster.
Perfect. I think it's good.
Okay, the next one is 3.
What game should everyone play at least once?
At least once? I think everybody has to, play Final Fantasy VII. I feel like they just have to play it. Because it is just the pinnacle of storytelling, RPG elements, and just no matter what, you're just going to fall in love with those characters. And after you beat that first disc, I swear to God.
Do they have to sink in like a certain number of hours, or do they have to grind to the end?
You have to play it for beginning time. You just have to. Gotcha. You have to put in the work. You have to put in the work to beginning to end, and you'll thank me. I promise you, no matter what, you'll thank me in the end.
Next one, number 11.
In Dungeons and Dragons, what is your alignment?
So I've actually never played Dungeons and Dragons, but I'm always, if there's a mage, a wizard, a sorcerer, like that's me. That's me, no matter what.
You should totally play.
I have costumes and everything too.
Yeah, exactly. When I was like doing my daddy chatty like research, I was like, it's like this guy has to be on like D&D talk, right? Or something, right?
Like a lot amazing. Of fun too.
Okay. If you ever want to and you need like content or whatever, everyone needs content.
Right.
Hit me up. If you got like buddies or whatever, I'll DM like a one shot like for you guys. I'm really good. I'll hook you up and it'll be fun. You won't have to learn shit. I'll take care of explaining the rules as we go. We could do it in like 3 or 4 hours. But if you ever really feel that desire to roll some dice and to stab some orcs, like,
hell yeah, I'm into it.
Okay, the next one is number 5.
Ooh, when you attack, are you a creature that uses your strength, your dexterity, your charisma? What is the attribute you use to do the most damage?
The most damage. I would love to say that strength is a big one for me, but I love being able to talk people out of things or talk people into things. So I have to say charisma, persuader, always the most fun. Like when you could do the special powers of Mass Effect and like persuade people to do stuff like that, I was obsessed. Obsessed.
Did you punch? Did you go renegade?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Love being the bad guy. I don't know why it's so fucking fun.
There is just going to be that number 12.
In RPGs, Mass Effect, do you take the Paragon path or do you take the Renegade path?
I used to be a Paragon, but I used to always be like, I'm going to do the right thing. It's so fucking fun to be, you know, and then all of a sudden, like there was just something about it, especially in Mass Effect when like your face started to change and like you started to look like more evil and sinister. It was just full on Renegade. You just learned to love the chaos of being a Renegade. It's so much fun.
Next one. I rolled 12 again.
Ooh. Yeah. What is the most enjoyable game that you have ever played?
So I'm gonna have to say it's been Overwatch. My Overwatch career, like starting out, I've always, you know, SOCOM 2 was my first multiplayer game, but I've played.
Oh my god.
Yes, SOCOM 2 was incredible. And like SOCOM 2, Halo, Call of Duty, like I would play those games really seriously for like about 6 months or so. But Overwatch, just for some reason, is the only first person multiplayer competitive game that has been able to keep my interest, because it is such an intricate game to master. There's just something about it that's kept my interest. And I'd have to say Overwatch. I really would. I've been playing it for almost 6 years now.
Okay, the next one is 6.
What game is your guilty pleasure?
My guilty pleasure. So I played this game called Skull the Hero Slayer. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It's like a Metroidvania / like roguelike game. And I've poured like 300 hours into it. I don't know why. I just could not stop playing it. And no matter what, like I beat it a million times. And for some reason, I just cannot stop playing it. And it's either going to be that or Risk of Rain 2. Either that or Risk of Rain 2 would be my guilty pleasure games that I just have not been able to stop playing since they came out or since I touched them.
What makes them guilty for you?
Because I have no reason to keep doing the same exact thing in them that I've been doing over and over. And like, I know everything about it and I've pretty much played it to death, but I still just can't stop playing.
Okay. World of One.
What is your favorite like streaming tool of the trade?
The tool of the trade, my favorite is on it'd be my alerts, making my alerts. They really were like the funnest thing for me to do, and like they were ridiculous. And I've never done anything like, you know, dressing up and stuff or like acting like a fool like that. Like, I remember when I first did it, it took me like 3 weeks, and I was so excited and proud of myself that I made those things. They're quite ridiculous if you ever get a chance to see them. And that I feel like is like something that I feel like stands out a lot, and I'm very, very proud of those, and I can't wait to make more.
Do you have a favorite card game?
Well, Magic the Gathering, hands down. I played a shit ton of Magic the Gathering, both casual, and I also got into standard tournaments for a while. I don't know if you guys ever played Magic in like tournaments and sanctioned tournaments. It's quite an experience. It's quite an experience. People get really, really fucking heated. I've had somebody flip a table on me before because I play the, I'm a blue control player. So
you bastard.
Yeah. So it's very unfun to play against, but I got so like bad into it where I just had like, it was like, I just had garbage bags full of Magic cards just all over the place. And I finally was just like, I have to stop. This is bad. I'm spending like $200. Like my decks would cost upwards to like $800 just for one deck of 60 cards.
What is your preferred genre? Are you alternate history, fantasy, cyberpunk, horror? What's your genre?
JRPGs are my jam. I love JRPGs. That's like once I like learned about them and just I was obsessed with it. I always had a PlayStation and an Xbox, and PlayStation was specifically my system for all those JRPGs. The PS Vita was such an incredible system.
I love every so often you run into like a Vita stan who is like, man, the PS Vita is still great, and they still make games for it sometimes.
Sometimes.
Okay. This is the next to last question. So this will be the four.
And possibly the most dramatic and controversial way possible, what is the most overrated game?
You know, I wish I could think a little bit harder about this, but I do think, I've always thought the Assassin's Creed games were very overrated. I loved the first and the second one, and every game after that they made, I just felt like was just completely void of anything exciting to me. I don't know why that's the first game that popped in my head. I think it was because I was so obsessed with the first and the second one. And I was like, oh, like they're pumping out another one every year. And somehow I managed to lose interest each year another one came out for some reason.
Okay. All right. We are at the very last question, and it is the most difficult question.
Oh, no.
This is the most difficult question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So here, like the lights dim, the camera is panning around to everyone in the room. And then finally it turns and like focuses hard like on you. There's some deep background music that's kind of like a
heartbeat.
I don't know what I was gonna say. there's a heartbeat. It's like, yeah. Whatever the game is, this is specifically a D&D one. You've rolled your last die, you've failed your last death save, you are dying. What are your final words?
My final words, my absolute final words. I take everything into consideration of my life, what brought me to this point. And I think, and I look at my enemy hard in their eyes right there. And I say, Daddy Chen will fuck you in the end. Don't you worry. And my final breath comes out.
I love it. I love it.
You may think you've won. You may think you've won. I'll get you some way, though.
Fast forward 100 years, the Daddy Chatty avatar returns. This season, we really promise we're going, Design Thinking Games is going to be more active on various social media. We understand as aged Gen Xers / millennials, elder millennials, that like, yo.
Wait, I'm firmly rooted in Zennial. I am a Zennial. So I am right between Gen X and millennial.
Okay. As a Zennial and a millennial elder, we are... We acknowledge that, look, like our social media game for the last two seasons hasn't been on point, but this season, you're missing out if you're not following Design Thinking Games on the three T's, TikTok, Twitch, and Twitter, probably in that order as Twitter is a dumpster fire. well, on TikTok, you can actually see Ben shooting some like excellent, like just like footage of some like of the really cool and interesting games we're playing. As you know, we look at games clinically and deconstruct them to the point of no longer being enjoyable, but that makes for some really good footage. The other thing you'll find there are like this kind of like network of amazing indie designers who we are interviewing, some of whom, or we're interviewing on this show for the season, and we're all going to be engaging there. We'd love for it. If you are into user experience, if you're into the player experience, if you're into the craft of game design, if you're into us, Design Thinking Games.
Thank you for listening and connecting with Design Thinking Games on TikTok, Twitch, and Twitter. You can also check out designthinkinggames.com to request topics, ask questions, or see what else is going on. Until next time, game on. Any final thoughts for our listeners, Rapid Protobot?
Destroy.